I'm Brian Tetta, executive producer of The View. It's Friday, and I'm here with Anna Navarro. This is Behind the Table. It is Friday. Hello, Anna. How are you?
Distracted.
Distracted? Why are you distracted? Cha-Cha's here, which is exciting.
It's been a good week, don't you think? It's been a long week. I feel like there's so many things that have happened this week.
They're all long to me. Days are long. The years are short.
Tuesday feels like it was a month ago.
It does. No, it definitely does. And it was 3 days ago, which is weird for a State of the Union to be so far into the political season. But, that was the topic today. We did almost four segments on it. You and Joy were up late talking about it. I don't like Joy being up that late. That doesn't bode well for me in the mornings.
Well, she was in a wonderful mood today.
She was, I will say.
We were just making each other laugh yesterday. We started with the State of the Union, and we both thought that Joe Biden was doing very well, but then we moved on to the Republican response. And the memes that were coming out on Twitter,
they were gold.
We kept sending each other like our favorite post on Twitter, just poking fun and raking this woman, Senator Katie Britt from Alabama, over the coals. I mean, it was so comical and scary.
Did you know anything about her before this?
I've never heard about her, and I think I had heard that she was a rising star, but boy, she went from being a rising star to being a black hole.
Yeah, it was a tough, it's a tough response, and supposedly, I don't know if it's accurate or not, but Republicans are upset about it.
Well, it's a thankless job, right?
Yes.
I can't remember anybody who's done a great job,
right?
But I remember everybody who's done a horrible job, right? Bobby Jindal,
sure.
Marco Rubio and the water bottle,
mm-hmm.
Michelle Bachmann. When she had that weird response, and now this lady, I'm like, I can't wait to see what Saturday Night Live does with it.
Yeah, it's gonna be fun.
But part of me thinks, just play the video.
You don't even have
to do a skit about her. You just play the video. It is that comical and that terrifying.
Now, part of the lore of polls and things like that is that the State of the Union's not a big deal as far as changing people's hearts and minds. But do you think this one might be a little bit different? Because the narrative was so set that Biden would stumble. He'd barely get through it. And then he came in with such big energy. Do you think this might change people?
I do think.
Yeah.
So I think the State of the Union changed people. I mean, I know so because I've seen the poll numbers after it. And the poll numbers before the State of the Union and the poll numbers that were taken just after the State of the Union are dramatically different.
Oh, okay.
There was like a 20 plus point swing. It was something like 62% of people thought he did a good job. I think you're right. I think Republicans dug their own grave. I've been saying over and over and over again, I know Joe Biden. I've known him for years and years and years. Is he slower of step? Yes, he is. He's 81 years old. Is he, is he old? Yes, he is. He knows he's old. But I engage with the guy. I see him, I don't know, 3-4 times a year. And we talk about things we've done. We've talked about policy issues. This guy knows what he's doing. So this narrative that Republicans created and manufactured, and some Democrats got shaken by, because Democrats get shaky and panicky, that he was old and incoherent and had dementia and isn't in charge. It's just false. And I think yesterday you saw it. I particularly enjoyed his ad-lib moments. I loved mm-hmm. when he was goading the Republicans, when he was mocking them, kind of baiting them, and they fell for the trap, right? So he had this call and
almost
response
almost in the same
going.
Way they did last year. They kind of walked right into it again. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, but they just can't help themselves. So I thought he was really, really good. I really like this line that he closed on about, I may be old, but my ideas are not.
Yeah.
And it's not about how old we are. It's about how old are our
ideas. He did that on Seth Meyers, and you liked it there too. But you're right. I think he's touched something with that.
And I thought, listen, like I said on the show, I thought he took the immigration mm-hmm. issue, which has been a huge vulnerability, biggest issue going on right now, worrying not just Republicans, worrying Democrats too, and Democrat mayors, Democrat governors. And he turned it to his favor. He put Republicans on the defensive on it by talking about this bipartisan legislation, all the good things that were in it that Republicans sabotaged under the orders of Donald Trump. So, I thought it was a very good thing. I'm frustrated by some Democrats. And we talked about this, I think, last week, what I call the standard of perfection and the purity test that Democrats impose on themselves and on their which is on their elected officials, which is very different than Republicans. Like, Republicans don't care.
They fall in line.
That, you know, their nominee is found liable of sexual assault. They don't care their nominee boasted about sexual assault. They don't care that the guy's been found liable of fraud. They just don't care. They will go out and defend and justify any crazy thing that he's done or said. Democrats, some Democrats are clutching their pearls now because he used the word illegal. I don't like the word. But guess what? I've been doing immigration issues. I've been working on them since I was in my 20s. It was the word that was used. Okay? So he had a slip up. If out of an hour and 7 minutes that he was up there saying great things and doing a great job, the only thing you're focusing on is that he used that term, despite the fact that he said that he was not going to demonize immigrants, despite the fact that he said he was not going to separate families, where he drew a huge contrast between him and Trump. If that's what you're focusing on, you've lost sight of what we're doing, people. Give me a break.
Yeah, it's a impossibly high bar, I think, that Democrats hold themselves to, while the others don't seem to do that.
Oh, you know what we didn't talk about, which is like crazy.
What's that?
George Santos
was there
showing up. That man has no shame. I mean, not a
He's running again. He's running in a different district. I can't believe it.
He looked a little rough, huh?
Yeah, well, I think it's been a tough year for George Santos. you're right. The bar was so low for the president. But then when he was walking in, I was nervous. I was nervous because he seemed to be moving slow. He's taking pictures in the selfies, and it's taken him so long to get up there. And it wasn't like the energy. But then he just turned the switch when he got up there to give that speech. And it was really. And now, of course, other side is saying he was too amped up. He must have been taking something. He was crazy. I mean, it's just he can't win.
Because they have nothing to attack him on because he really mocked them and toyed with them.
He was not sleepy.
And listen, he stayed for a full hour after the speech, taking selfies and getting congratulatory.
He does that when he's on this show. He sticks around forever.
And the only thing, if you take Joe Biden's State of the Union in a vacuum, just by himself, without the low expectations, it was still a very solid, very good State of the Unions. But if you add the expectations and then you add the contrast of the Republican response, which was insane, insane.
It was insane.
And the funny part is that this woman they picked, a senator from Alabama, is supposed to be the sane wing of the party.
Well, all right, you referred to this, but a lot did happen this week. Another thing we haven't gotten to talk to you about yet, Mitch McConnell endorsed Trump. Now, were you surprised by this?
I was disappointed. I was not surprised.
Okay.
I know Mitch McConnell some, and of course I've, watched him and have served him as a majority and minority leader for a long, long time. Listen, this guy is a partisan, and he makes no bones about it.
Right. Well, we've seen it. Yeah.
You know, we saw what he did in the Supreme Court. He doesn't pretend not to be a partisan. He had told us he would do this. And so I think nobody who's observed the relationship between Trump and McConnell thinks that they don't hate each other. They hate each other. There's no love lost. They hate each other. But Mitch McConnell, I think, is signaling, take your medicine, Republicans, and line up behind this guy. Democrats are seeking perfection and letting the perfect be the enemy of the good. And Republicans, even those who hate him, will line up behind Donald Trump.
The irony of this, of course, is that Trump will never line up against anybody he hates. He'll never, he'll never be supportive of someone that he dislikes. Ever.
Oh, I don't think he's ever going to put Nikki Haley on a VP shortlist, because I think the thing that Donald Trump values the most and is loyalty, and the thing he does not forgive is disloyalty.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'm not sure that and I think that with somebody like Nikki Haley, the bar is different than with somebody like Ted Cruz, who said horrible things about him, or Marco Rubio, who said horrible things about him and now have changed their tune. With Nikki Haley, it's different because he's the hand that fed her.
Right.
Right. He gave her foreign policy chops.
Mm-hmm.
He
appointed her.
Put her in his administration as ambassador to the UN. And then she turns around and runs against him and says all these things. Oh, he's never getting over that.
Yeah. All right. Well, that'll be
There's
fun to watch.
There's not enough groveling that lady could do. But
all right.
I expect her to endorse him.
I think it's definitely because if she's thinking about her political future with that party, she's probably going to have to.
Listen, I've said 100 times, she is a political windsock. She's a human windsock who blows and bends depending on which way the wind is blowing.
Yeah, because right now her supporters are a real vulnerability.
Okay, there's not that. You see, so I have an issue with this.
Yeah,
people
please.
Talk about Nikki Haley supporters. I'm not sure how many of those people are actually Nikki Haley supporters and how many of those people are anti-Trumpers.
Okay.
Who were using Nikki Haley, who saw Nikki Haley as their last possible life raft to hang on to.
When everybody else was gone. Yeah.
As everybody else was gone. So, I mean, we'll figure it out and we'll decide. But I also know, and we've learned, supporters and voters, are not like marbles. That a candidate endorses somebody doesn't mean that all your supporters are going to fall in line.
Right.
Look at what happened in 2016 with Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton. Some of those Bernie bros hated Hillary Clinton and ended up not voting.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
No, absolutely.
So if that happens again this year, and some of those people who were voting for Haley hate Trump so much that they don't line up, you know, that could be the difference between winning or losing.
Absolutely. We'll be right back.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts. Step into the world of Hollywood like never before with Melissa Rivers' Group Text podcast. Melissa, renowned for her red carpet expertise and storytelling prowess, invites you to join her and her famous friends for hilarious and heartfelt conversations. From discussing the latest binge-worthy TV shows, navigating the highs and lows of life, and dissecting celebrity fashion, there is never a dull moment. With exclusive stories from special guests like Chelsea Handler, Cheryl Hines, your favorite reality stars, and deep dives into intriguing topics like the Where is Wendy Williams documentary, this podcast offers an insider's look into the glitz and glam of Tinseltown. It's not just Melissa's podcast. It's a collective experience where you're invited to join the conversation. So if you've ever wanted a peek behind the Hollywood curtain, subscribe to Melissa Rivers' Group Text podcast now on your favorite platform. Get ready for laughter, tears, gossip. In other words, unforgettable moments that'll keep you coming back for more. Don't miss out. This is one Group Text you won't want to exit.
The first ever criminal trial of a former president is underway in Manhattan. It's one of potentially four trials facing former President Trump as he makes his third bid for the White House. What do voters think about his culpability, and would a guilty verdict make a difference in the election? I'm Galen Druk, and every Monday and Thursday on the 538 Politics podcast, we break down the latest news from the campaign trail. We sort through the noise and zoom in on what really matters, using data and research as we go. That's 538 Politics every Monday and Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.
All right. Well, now the other thing that happened this week, since we've seen you last, you visited Biden-Harris campaign headquarters.
I did.
What was that like?
Well, so I was en route to Washington, D.C. I had to be in Washington on Tuesday. I had to do some CNN for Super Tuesday. And then I had an event Tuesday night in Washington for Unidos, which is the biggest Latino advocacy group in the organization in the country. And so I took the train, and en route to Washington. I stopped in Wilmington, where Biden headquarters are. You know, my very good friend, Julie Rodriguez Chavez, is the campaign manager. Mm-hmm. She is the granddaughter of Cesar Chavez, the very respected, well-known labor and civil rights Latino leader, the farm workers,
yeah.
right? And that led all those boycotts. Julie grew up going to boycotts and going to marches and protests with her grandfather. She told me this story of being a little girl marching with her grandfather and meeting Whoopi for the first time.
Oh, wow.
And so she says it was a march on Washington for equality rights, for gay rights back in decades ago. She was it's got to have been over 30 years ago. And she said she was a little 8-year-old girl and she went up to Whoopi and asked her for an autograph. And she still has that autograph.
Oh, that's amazing. Oh, how cool. Whoopi will love that.
I got to tell Whoopi that story. And so I wanted to visit my friend and I wanted to say hello to everybody working there. They've got about 150 people working there and growing. A lot of young people working really hard, 24/7, long hours, as people do in campaigns. So it was fun to be able to spend time. I, got a little briefing from the different departments on some of the things that they were doing. And then I had dinner and drinks with my friend, Julie, and frankly thanked her for what she's doing. Because, as you know, I have said from day one, this is a binary choice. I think that people are now realizing it is a binary choice, right?
Yeah.
We're now to the point where we no longer think that a miracle is going to happen on the Republican side or that some unicorn is going to fall from the sky on the Democratic side. It is Trump versus Biden. And so
I feel like last night was the starting pistol of that. Sure. Now we're there, I think.
For me, it started.
You were there. Yeah.
Let's just, I think this week has been between Super Tuesday results, Haley dropping out, and last night. It's a reality check.
Yep. All right. Well, the other big conversation we had this week was that Trump had challenged Biden to a debate, although Trump never debated any of his primary challengers. Now, this is another one of the low bar things, because Trump now, in the past, he'd been concerned about the rules of the debates and that he thought it was a Democratic lean of the commission that was choosing the debates and who was where they were and all that. But this time he said, any place, any time, any rules, I'll show up. I'll be there. Now, Biden hasn't said, yes, he'll definitely debate Trump. Do you think he should?
You see, I think that Biden and his campaign are doing it again. I think they are baiting mm-hmm. Republicans into creating such a low bar.
Mm-hmm.
Because all these people, like all of these Republicans, I don't know how many people have asked me this week, do you think Biden will debate? Do you think Biden will debate? I do think Biden will debate. I think Biden is an institutionalist, and I think Biden respects democracy and the norms and thing, and will agree that voters deserve to hear a debate between the two major nominees.
Mm-hmm.
But by creating this idea that Biden is afraid to debate, when Biden shows up and debates and he performs, as I expect he will again beat those expectations. So I think he should debate. I think he will debate. And I think he will do very well in a debate because Joe Biden knows policy and because Joe Biden likes to spar mm-hmm. Scranton Joe, fighting Joe. So, he's not intimidated and let's face it, Donald Trump says a lot of crazy shit.
All right. We have a listener question for you, or it's a text rather. Here it is. Talk about being a Republican in the era of Trump. Do you find it hard to defend the Republican Party, or is it defending the party as a whole different thing from defending Trump?
I think the party has become Trump. For a long
right.
time, I kind of resisted that idea. But I think it's hard not to admit that when you see that Trump, from his perch, can sabotage a bipartisan immigration bill that's
yeah.
taken months to negotiate. I think it's hard to debate that Trump is not the party when you see him skating into the nomination despite all of these legal issues, despite
yeah.
January 6th. Hard to argue he's not the party when you see what he was able to do in knocking off Kevin McCarthy in Congress and putting in this new speaker, Mike Johnson, and
mm-hmm.
the amount of people in that are in governor seats, that are in state legislatures, that are in Congress, that have been influenced by Trump that have been turned into something different because of Trump. People like Elise Stefanik, like Lindsey Graham. They're completely different elected officials than they were before Trump. And the people who have been elected in Trump's image, like the Matt Gaetz, like Marjorie Taylor Greene. So I think it's hard to continue arguing that this is the truth of the matter is that Republicans like me are in a minority.
Right.
In a very small minority. And look, this week I have seen a lot of Republicans on the air and the different cable stations kind of like going through the stages of grief of realizing that they have nobody to vote for. I went through that in 2016.
Mm-hmm.
I had never in my life voted for a Democrat for president. You know, I've told you the story. I schlepped my absentee ballot around in my bag, in my suitcase for weeks and weeks and weeks because I couldn't bring myself to vote for Hillary Clinton. And I loathed Donald Trump. And I had a very personal loathing for Donald Trump because he had, you know, he had gone after a disabled reporter. I have a disabled brother. He had gone after immigrants. He called Mexicans rapists. Well, you know, I'm an immigrant. He had, you know, said horrible things about Rosie O'Donnell. Well, Rosie O'Donnell is my friend. He had said horrible things about John McCain. Well, John McCain was my friend. So it was almost like if he had taken a list of things he could do to offend me personally, piss me off. And so for me, there was no choice, right?
Mm-hmm.
But going from I'm not going to vote. I don't know if you remember. I went around for a while saying I was going to write in my mother.
I do remember that.
And there were actually people who wrote in my mother on their ballot, like Anna Navarro's mother. My mother, who was alive back then, was terrified every time I said that. And you know, I kept saying to her, Mom, you're really not going to get
elected.
You're not
going to win.
You're not going to win, Mom. Don't worry about it. You have nothing to worry about.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's one thing to say I'm not going to vote for Trump. It's another thing to say, I'm going to vote for the Democratic nominee when you have been a Republican your entire life, when it's been a big part of your life, particularly if you've, you know, worked in politics. It's difficult. And I think people who haven't been put in that position kind of underestimate just what a difficult decision and difficult move that is. Now, it's like virginity, man. Once you lose it, you've lost it. Like, I got zero qualms.
Right.
About voting for Joe Biden. Zero. But also it's because, you know, I've known this guy for like 25 years. I know what a decent human being he is. I know what a good human being he is. And I know how knowledgeable he is on some of the policy issues that I really care about. And also, I've now seen 4 years of Trump. In 2016, there were people who voted for Trump, Republicans, because they thought the presidency would change him. Would turn him into a serious person, a decent person, that the weight of the office, the gravitas of the office would somehow turn him into a different person. Well, no. You know
not
what
so
happened?
Much.
He turned the presidency.
Yeah.
He changed the presidency. He changed the Republican Party and he changed the country. So I don't even have to think twice about which way I'm going on this in this binary choice. Like I said today, Four more years.
Yeah, you didn't leave a lot open for discussion on that one. All right. Well, listen, thank you for joining me, Anna Navarro. Monday, I'll be back with Sarah. The number to call or text us with questions is right here in this episode description. You can leave us reviews. Anna still has not figured out how to read them, but she appreciates that they're there. I show them to her.
You show me the ones in Spanish.
I do. I need you to.
Them.
You translate them wrong because I've gone to Google Translate and found out that they're not saying mean things about me at all.
They always say horrible things about you.
They're actually saying nice things about me. The bride guys are real. They're there. I believe in them.
You have to show me some of these reviews.
I can't believe
people actually leave reviews.
Yeah, they leave reviews. They got like 1,500 reviews.
I don't think the bride guys are real.
The bride guys are real.
The bride guys are all people you're paying. They're you. You are pretending to be other people.
Hashtag bride guys. All right. Thank you guys very much. Thanks for listening and have a great weekend.
Behind the Table is executive produced by Brian Tetta. Supervising producers are Nathan Getty and Summer Shake, with production assistant Emily Darcy. The vice president of ABC Audio is Liz Alessi, and the executive producer of podcast programming is Laura Mayer. Special thanks to Lori Hogan, Susie Liu, Meg Fierro, Molly Kaiser, Josh Cohan, Ariel Chester, Frankie Perez, Audrey Mostek, and Dana Schaefer.
Step into the world of Hollywood like never before with Melissa Rivers' Group Text podcast. Melissa, renowned for her red carpet expertise and storytelling prowess, invites you to join her and her famous friends for hilarious and heartfelt conversations. From discussing the latest binge-worthy TV shows, navigating the highs and lows of life, and dissecting celebrity fashion, there is never a dull moment. With exclusive stories from special guests like Chelsea Handler, Cheryl Hines, your favorite reality stars, and deep dives into intriguing topics like the Where is Wendy Williams documentary, this podcast offers an insider's look into the glitz and glam of Tinseltown. It's not just Melissa's podcast. It's a collective experience where you're invited to join the conversation. So if you've ever wanted a peek behind the Hollywood curtain, subscribe to Melissa Rivers' Group Text podcast now on your favorite platform. Get ready for laughter, tears, gossip. In other words, unforgettable moments that'll keep you coming back for more. Don't miss out. This is one Group Text you won't want to exit.